Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin, the auto editor here at How Stuff Works. And with me, as always, Dependable Ben.
Oh, Dependable Ben.
Yeah.
I got an
here.
Adjective. Yeah. Well, I do show up because I'm supposed to. So
it's work, but it's fun.
It is work, but it's fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, every once in a while, we come up against some stuff. You know, of course, I'm biased because we're on the show together. Mm-hmm. But I think most of the stuff we cover is very interesting. And every once in a while, we come up on a topic like this, which might actually be crucial information.
Crucial? Well, what is it? What are you talking about?
We're talking about car survival kits.
Fantastic. That's good, because that's what I have all my notes prepared for, is car survival kits. Imagine that.
How serendipitous.
Yeah, isn't it, though? Yeah, it worked out well that way for me.
Well, I guess we should probably start with? You know, not to make it too much of a downer, but a good question that someone would ask, why is it important to have a car survival kit?
Very important, because worst case scenario. I mean, you have to remember that there's always a chance that you're going to be stranded, stuck mm-hmm. in your car, or your car is going to somehow become, you know, broken down, incapacitated in some way.
Sure.
And you may be stuck somewhere that you would rather not be with less than what you need.
Very hot, very cold climate.
Very hot, very cold. It could be very hot or very cold, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm trying to think of any other situation. But
Middle
of nowhere is a good one, because you know, you just have to be ready for everything. You have to know where you're going, what to prepare for ahead of time. And that's the tough part, is what to prepare for, because you have to think through all these different scenarios in your head and what could possibly happen and how bad could it get. And I have a couple of examples of just how bad it can get. And the first one's real downer. The second one, I'll promise you, is a little bit better.
Okay,
slightly better.
Let's go ahead.
In 2006, James Kim and his family were lost in the wilderness. This is in southern Oregon. Now, James Kim was the senior editor at CNET News. They do reviews and, you know, product reviews, gadgets, things like that. But he was the senior editor there, and I guess they had just spent Thanksgiving in Seattle, and they were on their way to back to home in San Francisco. And I'm going to just kind of, you know, go over this pretty quickly here. There's a lot of detail, and if you want to look it up, please do. It's it's an interesting story, unfortunately tragic. We'll talk about that too. So they missed a turn when they were leaving Seattle, and they're in Portland, Oregon, and they got off on the wrong road. They were trying to get onto Route 42, which is a main road to the coast. Mm-hmm. And instead of returning to the exit that they missed, they checked a map and they tried to pick a secondary route that went along this real rugged wilderness route. And they got into this this real high elevation situation there in the mountains, and a lot of snow. The car became stuck in the snow, and they couldn't move anywhere.
Oh, no.
So they're stuck, and they're on this road that apparently was an unused logging road that should have been closed off. There was a gate that was supposed to have been closed. There's some dispute as to why it was left open, but it was left open.
Right.
And so they're stuck on this road that no one travels on. This is, again, worst case scenario here. We're talking about it. And the snow continues to fall. They're stuck in the car. Now, this is happening on, they left on Saturday, November 25th in 2006. Now, by November 25th, I should say, in 2006. By early morning on November 26th, that's when they stopped. So this is, I would assume, you know, 1 a.m., 2 a.m., whatever.
Sure.
They're on this mountain road. They can't go any farther. They're stuck. Now, on December 2nd, so we're talking 8 days later after they had left, that's finally when James Kim decided that he had to hike out of the situation to try to find help.
So there was still no contact or rescue.
None at all. And in fact, within that 8 days up to that point, they tried to keep warm by keeping the engine on and using the heater, but the car ran out of gas.
Mm-hmm.
They burned magazines and just campfire wood that they found, and in order to keep warm. So they're starting fire to try to stay warm in this situation. Now I don't know if even I told you who was with him. It was James, his wife Katie, and they have two daughters, Penelope and Sabine.
Mm-hmm.
So these are young girls that are with him. And so there's this added tension, you know, that he's got his kids and his family with him. Right. He's got to take care of them.
Right.
Now, they're trying to burn magazines to stay warm, and later they eventually ended up even burning the car's tires in order to try to signal rescuers, because they figured somebody's looking for him at this point.
And they see that black smoke.
Yeah, they would see the black smoke because it would leave a lot of smoke, of course. Yeah. And not only that, you know, there's a little bit of heat, I guess, from that that they could use. So can you imagine being stuck to the point where you're burning the tires on your car to try to stay warm and signal somebody? That's horrific to me.
Desperate measures.
Yeah, so now here we are 8 days later. He decides that it's best to leave the car to try to find help because no one's coming. And 8 days, no one's coming, no one's going to come. He only has tennis shoes, a jacket, and just light clothing is what they describe it as.
Mm-hmm.
So he heads out, and he thinks that the nearest town's 4 miles away because they looked at this map and they decided that, you know, if I hike this way for 4 miles, and he promised that if he didn't come back that night or that day, that or if he didn't find the town, he would come back that evening.
Yeah.
And he didn't come back. So his wife decides that 2 days later that she has to head out as well. And, you know, not knowing his condition, that he'd already succumbed to the weather. He died apparently on the 4th of December, so that's 2 days later. And at that point, he had hiked 16.2 miles away from the car at that point, and he was only a mile from a lodge that was fully stocked, which is really tragic. I mean, he had gone this far, 2 full days out in the wilderness.
Yeah.
His family, they waited 2 days. They started to hike as well, and a helicopter pilot that was, you know, in the area, not really part of the search party, found them, saw them on this trail, picked them up and airlifted them out, got them to a hospital, and they were safe. James Kim did die. They think that he died of hypothermia, or they know he died of hypothermia. But unfortunately, it was on the exact same day that his family was rescued. So if he had stayed with the car eventually, or maybe had tried to hike with his family on that day, just by chance, they would have all been found together. So really tragic,
and this
terrible
was,
situation.
And this was in 2006.
Yeah.
So I guess it's a lot of times when we are... when we are listening to stories of people being stranded, or when people hear stories about people, you know, in those kind of situations, we think of stuff like the Oregon Trail or the Donner Party.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, unfortunately, it is true that these kind of accidents can happen, you know, not just in a rural area in Oregon, but anywhere in the country.
That's right. I mean, here's a family in a station wagon in 2006 and just trying to get home from, where was it, somewhere in Oregon to San Francisco, and they made one wrong turn.
Mm.
Terrible mistake, but it proves the point that it can and does happen. So just be ready. And there's another slightly happier one that I've got here.
Yeah, let's go up. Let's take it up a notch.
This is where there's a man in West Virginia who was trapped in his car for 6 days. And this is from Christina Columbus Incorporated. There's a writer named Nanette. He's trapped in his car for 6 days after plunging 150 feet off the road into a snowy ravine.
Wow.
Now, he got out alive. Guess how he survived? He survived by eating packets of taco sauce that were left over in his car from the last time he went to, you know, apparently a Mexican food drive-in.
6 days on packets of taco sauce?
6 days he existed on packets of taco sauce. And this is just off the side of the road. This is, 150 feet off the road in a snowy ravine.
But it's 150 feet down.
Yeah, that's right. And deep snow again. And cases like this, I tell you, Ben, they let you know that, you know, you're walking this fine line when you travel in the winter. And even in the heat, we'll talk about that too.
Yeah.
But the wintertime is especially brutal, and you can be caught, you know, unawares, I guess, just at the wrong turn. I mean, all you have to do is make one wrong turn or skid off the road, which is very possible. And if no one sees that happen, you can be trapped.
Thank God. That had to be mild taco sauce.
Yeah, must have been. I don't want to
I'm not being flippant. I'm just saying that given the fact that he survived for 6 days on it, I'm not a hot sauce fan. All right?
I guess not. But,
okay, I know it's a tangent.
That's pretty remarkable. I mean, just to be able to exist on something that meek. I don't know if you want to say it that way, but
meager, maybe
meager. That's a better word. Yeah, very good.
So here's what we can do. We hope for our listeners, we hope that we're getting across the point that, you know, we're not trying to scare you. We are trying to point out that the stuff we're about to talk about, we're about to go into, is a good idea. And Scott, you and I have done some looking around, a little bit of digging. Mm-hmm. So we have a couple of lists here, and you know what, man? If you want, I'll go through some of the stuff that I have just as essentials.
Please do.
Okay, and bust me on this. Call shenanigans if I say something that's not essential.
Well, okay. I'll save my one main comment for the very end.
Okay, I took the PlayStation off this already.
PlayStation. Okay. So yeah, I didn't expect that. Go ahead.
Number one, and this is for any situation, hot or cold, rural or more suburban, the things that you will need if your car breaks down and you don't have immediate help. Number one, some drinking water.
Hmm. Right? Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, and you've got an excellent, got some excellent information here. Scott just turned me on to water packets.
Oh, yeah, you know what?
Instead of bottled water.
I'm scrambling for my notes here, but there are water packets, and the main benefit of a water packet, believe it or not, is that it will last a lot longer than bottled water.
How long are we talking?
5 years. 5 years, as compared to bottled water, which the freshness, or when you should rotate bottled water, if you keep it in a kit, you should rotate bottled water every 6 months because of bacteria, things like that. Mm-hmm. This sealed packet water, 5 years. And it's completely sealed, and they said that if one gets punctured, it's really no big loss because they come in small enough servings or portions that it's not a terrible loss if it becomes mm-hmm. punctured. But like if you have a gallon of water and it becomes punctured, like a milk jug gallon that you're trying to carry around, and good chance that's going to get punctured because it's rolling around and other things can hit it. You lose a full gallon of water. That could keep a lot of people alive for several days. I mean, if you ration it correctly.
Right. The federal emergency survival sites recommend planning to have 1 gallon of water per person per day.
Oh.
If it's at your house.
I didn't know that much. I mean, I didn't know that it was that much water.
That also, keep in mind, it's a little bit different in a car because in a survival situation outside of a car, that's counting water for hygienic purposes, showering and staying clean and stuff.
Understood.
This is, if we're talking about just drinking water, I think you can skirt a little bit, but we'll get into that.
Yeah, because these packets are only a little over 4 ounces each.
Yeah,
so you need lots of them. I mean, and they do sell them by the case, and I think they're like $40 a case. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, 60 packets per case.
Yeah,
might be worthwhile.
Might be.
Depends on your situation.
Especially for 5 years.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So next, non-perishable food. You know, dry stuff, nuts, energy bars, things like that.
Consistent across all lists.
Yes. All list, and we're doing stuff that's across all lists, basically.
Oh, beef jerky too.
Beef jerky's a good one, unless you're vegetarian.
Oh, good point.
They make, I'm sure they make some tofu jerky, and then a flashlight, right? This wasn't in all lists, but I think it's a good idea. Road flares or signals of some sort, mm-hmm. especially if you're stranded in the middle of the road on a dark, snowy night. A blanket or a tarp, anything that can function both to provide shade in hot weather and to keep your body heat in cold weather.
Good point.
First aid kit, jumper cables, of course, and rope, duct tape. You know, the uses are how?
Oh, sure.
Multitudes of uses.
Yeah, duct tape, you could do anything with that.
Tool kit, or at the very least, a multi-purpose tool.
Oh, you know what? I'm glad you said multi-purpose tool because it's a brand name product, but Leatherman is what I'm used to seeing a lot of people carry, or variations of that. Mm-hmm. And it has, it's just multi-tools. It has pliers, screwdrivers, knives, everything. Fantastic tool. I mean, anything like that is worthwhile to keep because it takes up very little space.
Yep.
And it's essential to have all that stuff with you when you're who knows what situation.
Right. Also, a poncho is a pretty good, any kind of rainproofing gear. I picked a poncho because it folds up into such a small storage space. Hmm. And that's if you're just looking to keep rain off you. If you want to stay warm, you need to have an extra set of clothes.
And I know that you carry extra clothes with you. Is that right?
I do.
Yeah.
I carry two pairs of clothes.
That's two.
Well, yeah. Well, okay. Now you're making me look crazy. So
you carry a suitcase?
They're in a duffel bag.
Sorry, I'm chuckling a little bit, but you know what? That's actually very smart of you.
Well, okay. Let me, don't idealize me too much because one of those pairs of clothes, it just looks exactly like what I would wear here to work. And I drink so much coffee that there's a very real possibility that I will spill something on myself.
You carry a second tuxedo in your car?
I wear tuxedos to work, listeners. That's true. And I have a second tuxedo as well. But, Scott, I have never given you a hard time about your bow tie and your top hat.
Yeah, okay. So you're saying the second set of clothes, one of the two sets that you carry, which, by the way, I still think is a good idea, one is just for when you have that meatball sub at lunch.
Right.
And, you know, the stray meatball rolls from your chin all the way down to the, you know, the tip
and
of
that's
your
before
shoe
I
there.
Knew about the food bibs.
Yeah,
in
yeah,
the
that's
car.
Right, yeah.
But the other set of clothes, which I guess is more relevant here, would be things like long pants, including gloves if you have to do any repairs, and some sort of jacket, or at the very least a windbreaker. Also maps, also a crank radio of some sort, crank technology we'll get to, right? Also, a stash of cash.
Really?
Yeah, I always have at least $20, preferably in you know, like five ones, a five, and a ten. I'm a little bit over meticulous about it, but also I never use this money. Mm-hmm. It's just in a bag in my trunk in case something happens.
That's a very good idea.
And put it all in a sturdy container, like a cooler, or you've got one of those flexible cooler things we were talking about.
Yeah.
And
cooler makes an excellent carrier. Apparently, I've got a note here. We'll talk about it in a minute. But someone suggested that's what you carry your kit in is a cooler.
And we talked today, as a matter of fact, all this stuff is in a kit that I have in my car. And we talked today, and you actually added a list of my essentials. And I'm going to take you up on it: a hand crank cell phone charger, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, because you know those cell phone batteries die at the most inopportune times, and if you're stuck. You know, you may have a car charger,
right?
But if you're trying to continually start your vehicle, or if you get stuck and you're stuck for days,
and if you're running your vehicle for heat,
your battery will die, or you'll run out of gas, or both. And it's always wise to have something that, you know, backup. And in this case, you know, I guess aside from carrying a spare battery with you, which you know would only be good for a certain amount of time, anyways, you have this charger, which is a hand crank charger. And you know, as long as you can crank that charger, you've got power for your cell phone. Now, that doesn't mean you're always going to be within range, because the Kims that we mentioned earlier, they had a cell phone with them. They were simply out of range of the tower. They were in such a remote location that it wasn't covered.
Right.
And so it doesn't help in every situation, but it's pretty wise to keep something like that on hand. The other thing that you mentioned a flashlight, and the problem with a flashlight is that, and it's good to keep one, don't get me wrong. Problem with the flashlight is that the batteries can die.
Yes.
And, well, they can and often do die. And there's a type of flashlight that you can use that has, what is it, an electromagnetic coil? Is that what I said?
Yeah, the shake and shine.
Yeah, the shake and shine.
That's what I call it.
Shake and shine?
I call it that. No, that's not the brand name.
Catchy.
It's catchy.
Yeah, you should market that.
I shouldn't have announced it on the air.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, if you know what he's talking about, it's just a flashlight that you shake this magnetic coil back and forth, energizes itself. I think you only have to shake it for,
a minute something?
1 minute, and you get something like 110 minutes of light out of that thing for 1 minute of shaking. So that would be valuable to keep.
That's worth your time, yeah.
Also, I was thinking that if you do have a standard conventional flashlight, one thing you may want to do is you may want to keep the batteries separate from the flashlight so that it doesn't inadvertently be get turned on in the kit, because that happens. I've had that happen before in a toolbox, and you open it up and you realize that it's on still from last time, or that just something has shifted and turned it on inadvertently, and that's a real drag.
Well, flashlight batteries are like cell phone batteries.
Yeah,
when you need them, they might run out.
Yeah, that's true.
So
that's
you can't assume. But Scott, let's see. I think we've mentioned before on the air that you actually are not a native son of Detroit, but you've spent quite a while there.
Yeah, like 25 years or
something. Yeah, so you know about, I'm going to take a guess and say that it snowed once or twice.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, and I was always really careful that I packed an extra hat, gloves. I think I even had wool socks and scarf, just anything, any kind of extra heavy winter wear that I could keep in the trunk with me easily. And I just left it in there. I packed it in there in the fall, and I took it out in the spring every year.
Now, here's something really interesting that I'm stepping over.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I just have to interrupt because this was so interesting that you said your mom always made you carry this.
Yeah.
What was it?
It's
I'm asking you, I'm quizzing you. You said specifically, and I thought it was strange at first.
You're stumping me. Did I tell you this?
Yes.
A candle. Oh, a candle. You know what? You're right. Because she always also told me to keep the hat and gloves and all that. And I was
That's confusing. I'm sorry.
I was diligent about that. That's okay. You know what? You're exactly right. I had to keep a candle in my glove box all the time. And you know what? Now that I know this part of it, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
So I can clue you in too. But a long time ago, I'd heard that a candle would keep you alive if you were stuck overnight in your car. It was just enough to keep you alive. You'll be freezing, but it will keep the interior of your car warm enough. Just a regular candle. I mean, just a typical kitchen candle or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
That will keep the interior of your car warm enough to stay alive overnight. And I always kept one. I never questioned it. You know, you have to have waterproof matches along with that so that, you know, you're sure that they're going to work or lighter.
Sure.
And, waterproof matches is what I kept in a little container. And I guess I needed to keep a mason jar or something like that, you know, a jar that you could have held that candle. I never thought through it enough to think about that. I guess
you were just going to hold it?
Well, I could have held it and, you know, melted some wax on the dash and put it on the dash. But I guess I needed to have a mason jar because that's the preferred method, I guess, now that I'm reading this. But I always did have a candle and matches with me.
And so as somebody who is from the South, when Scott first told me this, I thought, that's so strange.
Yeah.
What a different world my podcast partner is from. The world of candles in the winter.
Frozen world.
And let's go to the hot weather, because this one, I don't know about you, man, I had a little bit of a difficult time with this.
With the heat?
With trying to create an ideal survival kit for a car in the desert. I came up with just a couple of things, and you know, you probably have a much better list than I do. But I thought number one, extra water.
Yeah.
Just because you'll become dehydrated so quickly.
Yeah.
At least out in the U.S. where it's hot.
Mm-hmm.
And then number two, extra coolant, because what's the main problem mechanically for a vehicle that's traveling for a long distance in the desert?
Overheat.
Right.
Overheat, of course. So you're right on target with that stuff.
Oh, good.
Anything else, or do you
I put shade.
Shade?
Yeah.
You know what? Your poncho can come in handy for shade.
Oh, good call.
And, you know, the duct tape?
Mm-hmm.
You could use that to kind of fashion something with, you know, if you found sticks or whatever, you could make a temporary shelter or something like that.
Just
you
MacGyver
could,
up something.
Yeah, you could. You could.
Okay.
Now, because you don't want to stay in the car because it will become 200 degrees quickly.
Be an oven, yeah.
Yeah, you need to get out, but you also need shade. So that's important. Now, I've also heard umbrellas. You might want to carry an umbrella because an umbrella collapses very small in most cases, and it's easy to carry, and it provides shade.
Oh, as portable shade,
yeah,
not as
more than just a hat would. You know, hat would be important as well to keep some, you know, sun off of your face and head and neck if you can. If you have something with a brim,
definitely.
But an umbrella would be very helpful because it keep more sun off of you, I guess.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and then the last thing. Now this one's from AAA.
Uh-huh.
They say to keep a small cooler with bottled water and ice packs on hand, but that's very specific. If you're going to make one trip across, you know, you're going to go across Death Valley, and you want to pack all this stuff and make sure you have ice packs and everything with you, but you can't keep that on hand all the time, of course. You can't keep replenishing that. It's just impossible, really, to keep up with.
No, I can't do that.
No. But so anyways, I think for different regions, now the hot environment, it's a little different. I think... Yeah. I hate to say it, but I think it's harder to survive in the wintertime. We talked about this beforehand, and I mean, both are difficult, sure, but trying to stave off that cold is really, really tough. I mean, because you can succumb to hypothermia or frostbite.
Yeah.
You can asphyxiate yourself in the car inadvertently if you leave the car running and you don't realize the exhaust fumes are coming in. You know, if the car's tailpipe is blocked, or if you've got windows open, you have to keep fresh air coming into the car too, so you have to crack the windows. And if you're running the car with cracked windows and the exhaust has nowhere to go,
it's going to go in there.
It's going to go in the car, and you need to be real careful of that.
You know what, Scott? I see what you're saying, but although I agree with you about cold weather perhaps being more dangerous on an absolute level, the reason I'm going to agree with you is because the snow impedes transportation, you know, for other people who would happen by and see you. And
true.
I guess our listeners should probably also know, guys, Scott and I are both former Boy Scouts, which is why we might sound a little bit obsessive about preparing for stuff.
Be prepared.
Yeah. And a lot of people would wonder, you know, when we were looking into this, a lot of people on the internet were asking, you know, what should I pack and for how long? Kind of looking for a silver bullet.
Yeah, you know, and it's not just a matter of what should you pack and for how long, but that's important. You need to think about
that. Right, right.
And you also need to consider, and I really hadn't considered this much, you need to consider the number of people that are potentially going to be in the car with you.
Sure.
What if you're stuck with four people like the Kims were?
Yeah.
What if you're stuck with even more? What if you have a van and you're stuck with eight people in the car or 10?
Yeah.
It could just be you. That may happen.
Right.
But what about the ages of people, too? What if you have someone who's elderly with you, or if you have a baby with you,
yeah,
and the baby can't eat solid food? You need to think about things like this. If you're a father or mother and you're packing a kit for your car for this survival, this potential survival situation,
sure,
you need to consider that, you know, you're going to have these kids that can't, you know, they maybe need formula, they need diapers.
Mm-hmm.
Pack that stuff in there as well. I know you carry your diaper bag or whatever with you, but chances are you're not packing enough for, you know, 4, 5, 6 days or a week even.
Right.
Consider all those ages and what they need. Also, another thing that I, again, hadn't thought of this, pets. If you're going to have your pet with you.
Oh, yeah.
Consider the pet as another person, another water ration, another food ration,
mm-hmm,
if not their own food. If they don't have, if you don't have dog food packed away or cat food packed away,
they'll be thrilled about the beef jerky, probably.
Yeah, you know, they'll make the best of the situation,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Right.
But yeah, consider that you're going to have pets with you, and again, you know, they need water just like you do.
Mm-hmm.
So consider that as another ration of water that you need to have.
You know, Scott, I read somewhere that the best rule of thumb for what people would call a survival kit or a go bag or whatever,
mm-hmm,
would be about for 72 hours.
Hmm.
Because if you have people that are expecting to meet you at the end of your trip, you know, surely after a day or two, definitely after 2 days, they'll be trying to figure out where you're at.
I would hope earlier than that. If you did tell them, you know, I'm going to be here on this day at this time, especially if you're going to arrive at their place, not just like I'm headed here and, you know, maybe you'll talk to them later in the week. That's a different situation.
Yeah,
exactly. That's, you know, I'm glad you said that, because that's really key, is that you need to let someone know where you're going and roughly when you'll be there, you know, when to expect you, or, you know, whatever. That helps in that, you know, if you don't show up at that time, they know that somewhere between your home or wherever you're starting from and wherever you're supposed to be getting to, you're lost in there. And if they can't contact you, I mean, that's important.
And is that the big point we're saving?
You know what? I think it kind of is. I mean, it's important, you know, that you understand that, and that you also understand that for the most case, you're better off to stay with the vehicle.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Most cases. I don't want to say that in every case, because there's variations on this.
Sure.
Unbelievable variations on
this.
But usually it's better to stay with the vehicle. Someone will find you, or, you know, you signal somebody. If you've got one of these kits, you can maintain. You can stay where you are. In the case that, you know, you don't want to head out across the wilderness and walk like Mr. Kim did and end up freezing to death.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, if it's 8 days into it and you're thinking no one's going to come by this road, I got to do something, there's always that situation too. So, I don't know, it's really a judgment call when you get into that position.
Not to sound too Boy Scoutish, but be prepared, I think.
Be prepared. That's the best thing to remember.
Watch this segue. Are you ready for this segue?
Ready.
I prepared for some listener mail. Okay, so here we go. Maxwell writes in, and he is a 13-year-old listener from Washington State. He said he enjoys listening to the podcast, Scott. I thought you'd like that.
Of course.
He also said in our earlier podcast on how police chases work that we say the PIT maneuver stands for Pursuit Intervention Technique. And Maxwell said this can be true, but not all departments use the same words for those letters. For other places, they might call it Pursuit Immobilization Technique or Police Intervention Technique or Police Immobilization Technique. So that acronym's kind of flexible.
Okay, so this stands for a great variety of things across a lot of different states, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And he pointed out also that when we said earlier, I think you said that police restrict where they can pursue a violator.
Yes.
He said that where he lives, the police department does have a no pursuit policy, and that he thinks this has really helped keep innocent people safe.
You know what? I'm sure that he's right. I don't know how many pursuits are going on there, but maybe, I don't know. But he's probably right. I bet it's keeping people safe, because a lot of times it's just far too dangerous. I mean, they know. They make a qualified judgment.
I'm sure.
Yeah. I enjoyed that podcast, by the way, that police chase.
That was a lot of fun, mainly because neither of us have been in a police chase.
Yeah, that's right, and that still stands true.
To this day.
Well, at least I can speak for my side. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. I got a wild weekend coming up, but I'm going to try to stay at home.
For now, neither of us have been in a police chase.
And for our listeners, again, guys, thanks for hanging out with us. We hope you enjoyed this podcast on car survival kits. Is there anything we missed? Is there anything that you would add to a car survival kit? If so, please write in and tell us at highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the High Speed Stuff blog on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.